Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept speaking last week in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking tonight at the First Parish Church Meeting House in Cambridge at 6:30, then Wednesday night in Montclair, New Jersey at Congregation Shomer Emuna, on Thursday night at Barnes & Noble Union Square in New York, and Friday I'll be in Washington, D.C. at Plymouth Congregational Church. Then for the weekend, it's on Saturday to Portland and Bangor, Maine, Sunday to Bar Harbor, Maine, and Democracy Now! Has job openings, video news production fellowship, and our internship program. Check out democracynow.org. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and our crew. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today, we'll compare Hillary versus Bernie.
Dear KBOO members, as you may have heard, KBOO is currently in a strategic planning process to map out our next 3 years, what we'll focus on, what our goals will be, and how we will achieve these goals and best serve our mission. Our Strategic Planning Support Work Group is now looking for your input to build our vision for the next 3 years. There are two ways to participate. One, take 10 minutes and complete a survey to share your vision for KBOO's near future. The survey is on the KBOO website, but paper copies are also available at the station, and the Spanish version is coming soon. Two, sign up to join a focus group. There are 3 focus groups organized for May 9th and May 12th. Go to kboo.fm/KBOO Strategic Plan Survey to take the survey and learn more about the focus groups. Thank you for supporting your community radio station and for investing in KBOO's future.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or grendelscoffee.com.
I think my dog's a Democrat, and it breaks my heart to have to say an ugly thing like that. But there's a big old pile of evidence that all points towards the fact my dog might be a Democrat. Provide him with a place to live just to keep him off the streets. But he just acts like he's entitled, even tried to unionize the cat. Yeah, I think my dog's a Democrat.
Okay, that's a sarcastic song about my dog being Democrat. Yeah. I don't even have a dog.
Well, then you got nothing to worry about. All right, Oregon. Oregon. We are. Oh, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program.
It is.
This is KBOO 90.7 FM.
In Portland, Oregon.
In Portland, Oregon, and beyond.
231-8187.
All right, we are 1 week out from the Oregon primary election, an election which typically means exactly nothing.
But this time.
But this time. It might actually mean something.
Yes.
It might actually mean something. All right. So we have a couple guests joining us today by phone.
By phone.
That always makes things a little more complicated. It's hard to have an organized conversation when we can't look our guests straight in the face. But that's all right. We'll make it happen. We'll make it work.
Yeah.
We also have a slight lineup change to announce. If you looked at our show page on KBOO.fm, you may have noticed that we had listed today representing the Bernie Sanders campaign, Keisha. Keisha was unable to join us. Instead, we're going to have Lisa Stiller representing Bernie Sanders and representing the Hillary Clinton campaign, Moses Ross. So let's set the table, Joe, for the Oregon primary.
Set the table.
That's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor.
For provides useful background information to our listeners.
Okay.
That's what the metaphor represents.
Okay. First of all, normally in modern times, the Oregon primaries don't mean much.
No.
Because things are pretty much settled before that happens.
Right.
But this time, because of the resurgence and popularity of Bernie Sanders and the way in which people are perceiving, perhaps unfairly, the Hillary Clinton campaign, we actually have a role to play.
Right.
And we're right before, that is in June, not so right before, but in June, the big decider will be the California primary.
Right.
So this campaign, this struggle, this primary will sort of kind of indicate where people are going on the West Coast. Kind of.
Right. But increasingly so the West Coast goes, not necessarily the rest of the country.
That's true.
And we should mention at this point that if you're a Republican, you essentially have no choice to make in this primary. It's been made for you.
It's been made for
by
you.
By other people who live in other states. This is all a big argument for doing away with our stupid, stupid electoral system, at least as it exists now. I'm not saying get rid of voting. No, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, I thought that was what you were saying.
Yeah, well, I should just be in charge. That would be easier for everyone, I think.
That's what I think. I think I should be in charge.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay, you know that's Abe Proctor. You know right. I'm Joe Urus. And you know that this is chaotic radio.
It is chaotic radio. Let me say, before we get back to the Oregon primary, that this system is really stupid. There's no reason why your vote in a primary election in the state of Oregon should count any less than anybody else's. But as I mentioned, on the one side, the Republican side, we have a presumptive nominee already. On the Democratic side, the math heavily favors Secretary Clinton at this point in the contest. There should be a single day national primary so that everybody's vote counts.
I would do away with the Electoral College as well.
I would also do away with the Electoral College.
If we're going to get down to it, I mean, the Electoral College was invented by these rich white men who essentially created this culture, this society's rules, this government, this constitution, with a view toward making sure that nobody who didn't have property, anybody who wasn't white, or who was a woman, would not be able to vote and participate. So it's a really reactionary system to begin with.
Well, indeed it is. And I think we've just identified the two most seriously offensive issues in that reactionary system, the Electoral College and the fact that we have a staggered primary system in time. There's also within the two parties themselves, the way that delegates are first selected and then allocated appears from the outside to be very shady also, and would appear to fly in the face of the notion of one person, one vote.
Well, clearly. And the Democrats instituted this system back in the 70s basically to control the process.
Indeed. We even had DNC chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz earlier in this campaign explicitly say in an on-camera interview, it's still a little hard to believe she actually said this.
What did she say?
She said, and I'm paraphrasing now, that the superdelegate system exists to protect the party establishment from insurgent candidacies, presumably like
Trump.
Like Senator Sanders.
Yes.
They want to make sure that, yes, while these populists have a chance to have their day in the sun, that the party elite will never be seriously challenged.
Okay, now before we go to our guests who are on phone, and this is going to create a challenge for those of you who want to call in, but we do want you to call in. I just wanted to tell everybody that I went to the actual trouble of going to the websites of both candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I did that.
You did that.
And I discovered that actually...
he got your internet machine to work. That's great, Joe.
Right. I made my tubes work. And I realized that the Hillary campaign has very good from my point of view, very good positions, very good advocacy, as does the Bernie thing.
Yeah.
So really, really, probably, the contest is not so grim as was the Republican contest, where we have Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who might well win the presidency, Donald Trump, who is essentially the candidate of people very much like the terrible Roger Stone. And I'm just going to mention Stone very briefly. He was a Swift Boat inventor. He's the guy who knocked out Acorn. He's the guy who created the Brooks Brothers riot in Florida in 2000, which enabled the rigged decision of the Supreme Court, which gave the presidency to Bush the Lesser, which gave us the war in Iraq. Just a little background.
A little background.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the guy who essentially is the guy who is very possibly going to be president of the United States, who on his own knows nothing. And I don't mean nothing about this or that. I mean knows nothing. All he knows is how to trade buildings, go bankrupt, and then do it again.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
All right. So as we mentioned, Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee on the Republican side. Secretary Hillary Clinton appears to have the inside track to the Democratic nomination. She leads in both the number of pledged delegates and unpledged delegates, which is that's an allusion to the superdelegate system we talked about earlier. And she also has an edge on Senator Sanders in the total number of votes cast during this primary season.
And yet the research indicates that there is a stronger support for Bernie against Trump than you would expect.
Yeah, that's true. The poll after poll shows him running more strongly against Trump than Secretary
Clinton. So it's an interesting contest.
It is.
Should we introduce our guest?
I think we should. How are we looking back there, Steve? We're trying to make these telephone connections happen. All right. Joining us today on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program, representing the Bernie Sanders campaign, Lisa Stiller. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this morning. And representing the Hillary Clinton campaign, Moses Ross. Now, before we dig into our conversation, I'm sorry, welcome, Moses.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Abe.
Before we get started, I want to give you, both of you, a brief opportunity to describe your roles with your respective campaign organizations. Let's start with you, Moses.
Well, I have been a Hillary man for a very long time. I was a 2008 national delegate representing Oregon for Hillary. Over the last 8 years, I've seen what's been happening and agreed with what's been happening. And when Hillary decided to run this year, I was behind her 100%. And so far, so good.
Do you have an official role with her campaign in Oregon?
Oh, no, I do not.
Okay.
I am just a super volunteer who is doing everything he can to help get this woman elected our president.
Okay. Lisa, can you describe for us your association with the Sanders campaign?
I'm like Moses. I'm a volunteer. I've done some speaking for Bernie, phone banking, all the stuff us volunteers do. I want to mention that I was an Oregon delegate to the National Convention for Jesse Jackson back in 88. So I've got that history of similar kind of candidate representation and volunteer work.
Okay.
So what both of you, I think it's fair to say, are unpaid volunteers for the respective candidates, which is kind of neat, I think. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Okay. I guess the best way to work this is to invite each of you, first of all, to make kind of a statement about why you think your respective candidate should be the nominee of the Democratic Party.
Sounds good.
So let's start with you, Moses, talking about Hillary.
Well, what's exciting to me is that we have expanded on what happened in 2008, where we had the 18 million cracks into the glass ceiling that has been stopping women and minorities from being able to rise to their great potential. And so now here in 2016, we have finally an opportunity to break through those barriers, to be able to empower women, to be able to empower minorities in our country, to be able to achieve whatever they want to achieve through her example and through her policies. you start to look at the policies like you did, Abe, going to her website and reviewing some of the issues that she's taken positions on, you'll see that there is quite the similarity towards her positions and Sanders' positions. It's just that Hillary's are more pragmatic progressivism than they are more pie-in-the-sky idealism. And so because of that, I feel that she has a very realistic chance to be able to get all of our progressive values implemented into policy, and most importantly, to be able to defeat Donald Trump in the fall. We cannot have an ideologue, a demagogue in the office like Donald Trump. I can't even imagine a future with a President Donald Trump. And so with Hillary in the position that she's in, we've got to defeat Donald Trump in the general.
Okay. Thank you very much, Moses. Now, Lisa, you're going to talk a little bit about the reasons why we should be supporting Bernie Sanders.
Well, when I found out Bernie had announced that he was going to be a candidate, I was right there volunteering. I think, yes, he's an idealist, but he's also practical as well as being an idealist. And I think he is speaking for so many tens of millions of people. His ideas are what we need to really move forward. When you talk about his feelings about the minimum wage, about education, about housing, about childcare, he is right there for everything people need to do better, and that's his goal. I mean, he says that he wants people to be able to live their lives to the fullest, and his ideas will do that. It sounds pie in the sky, but if you look carefully at his website, he isn't going to jump us to $15 an hour tomorrow. He's got a phase-in plan. Most industrialized nations have single-payer health care. He's just putting us up there with the rest of the world. So I think Bernie really gets it when it comes to what everyone in the country needs to really make it.
Okay, I want to follow up briefly with both of you on a couple of terms you introduced there in your opening statement. Moses, start with you. You talked about Secretary Clinton's pragmatic progressivism. Can you describe what you mean by that, please?
Yes, I should. For pragmatic progressivism, yes.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you ask me to explain that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I apologize.
Oh, no problem.
Pragmatic progressivism is taking the ideals and the principles of the Democratic Party platform and actually having a political strategy to get them implemented. Bernie Sanders has idealism and lofty goals, but no pragmatic plan to get them implemented, given the Republican Congress that we have, given the ideology, the fixed ideology of the Republicans, and that last 7-8 years of obstructionism that they caused against Obama. So I'm just being realistic. I just feel that those are lofty goals, but given the political circumstances, I want pragmatism to get them implemented. And so that's what I mean by that, pragmatic progressivism, the idea that we are working on policies that benefit all of us, that make people's lives better, but we are realistic in getting them implemented.
So it sounds like you're suggesting that if Secretary Clinton is elected president, then we shouldn't expect a whole lot beyond incremental progress. Shoring up past victories.
I disagree 100%.
Then I'm trying to understand the difference between pragmatic progressivism on the one hand, as embodied by Secretary Clinton, and the idealism that both you and Lisa mentioned in the person of Senator Sanders. I'm trying to draw a distinction there.
I see what you're saying. That's a very good distinction. The distinction is being able to actually implement the idealism that you are expressing. And that's what Hillary is planning on doing with her pragmatic, progressive approach to these policy issues.
So for instance,
let me give you a great example.
Sure.
Of that. Great example of that is college debt and going to college. The idea that Bernie Sanders has would make it free for everyone. That includes people that are rich kids that can afford college already. In other words, putting that on their education on our backs, even though they can afford it. In her plan, she's expanding Pell Grants to allow those that need the assistance the most to be able to have the practical financing for it. So I think it's one thing to say idealism, free college for everybody. It's another thing to get the actual policy in place that is equitable for everyone. And that's what Hillary is doing.
Okay. Lisa, you mentioned in your opening statement the idealism of Senator Sanders, but you also suggested that contrary to what many people might think, he's not simply a dreamer. He has in place plans to implement his idealism. You mentioned specifically plans to phase in a $15 per hour minimum wage. So can you elaborate a little more on Senator Sanders' idealism and how he would bring that idealism to the American people in the form of new legislation?
Well, I don't think he's going to be that much different from Sanders, I mean, from Clinton, but his goals are, you know, a little more, you want to call idealistic, but it's a little more out there in the sense that they're really going to affect the change needed. One thing I want to point out that Sanders talks about a political revolution, and what he's meaning by that is simply that we not just need to elect Sanders as president, but those people to Congress who are going to be in line with some of those ideals and some of those ideas. So if we actually listen to Sanders and say, okay, well, we need to put our efforts into the president and to our congressmen, our senators, our representatives, that's part of it, getting those people in place to actually help these programs. Senator Sanders has a history of working well with the other party. I think his record on Veterans Affairs kind of shows that. I don't want to mention the guns, because I know it gets controversial, but also his history on guns talks a little bit about that, too. But I think Sanders, when he's talking about implementing his steps, you know, step by step, he's looking at using funds from places where they can come from. Speculators on Wall Street are a progressive income tax. So he's not basically going to, you know, tax the rich and leave the poor alone. He's going to do everything very little step by step and get his things into place within a matter of, you know, from 1 to 10 years, whatever program he's working on. But I think he is realistic in the sense that he knows these programs are going to pay for themselves. With $15 minimum wage, all of a sudden you're taking people off of social services. You're getting people into housing they can afford. So all of his plans, you know, have they affect each other.
Okay, I'm going to introduce the elephant into the room. The elephant, of course, being the fact that we have in the House of Representatives what I will characterize as an incredibly reactionary Republican dominance. And the problem, obviously, from the moment that an African-American was elected president of the United States, and I do believe racism plays a major part in this, by the way, from that moment on, everything that was planned or imagined as I will call progressive by the Obama administration was blocked. It didn't matter what it was, really. Everything was blocked and made impossible, made essentially the government nearly impossible to operate in terms of improvements or changes that would be what would be labeled progressive. Now, that's still true. I'm going to ask both of you to think about and to tell us how Hillary, how Bernie would be able to make that change happen so that they could actually do anything. Because right now, it seems to me that while it's important to have a president who's progressive, let's say, I would like to know how it is that they're going to be able to change Congress. Because from my perspective right now, it really doesn't matter. There is the very great possibility, and I think people discount this at their foolish level, it's very possible that Donald Trump, probably the most ignorant, more ignorant even than Bush the Lesser, most ignorant president in modern history, will, if he gets elected, would be dominating American politics with a Congress who would probably be supportive of him. Whereas if either Bernie or Hillary were elected president, they would still be battling the same forces. And the question is, I guess, would either of them be able to bring along in the course of this contest a change in the Congress of the United States? And I guess we'll invite Lisa to begin that argument, and then we'll go to Moses. Okay, Lisa.
It's an excellent argument, and it's probably, you're right, the elephant in the living room, because it's toss-up. I think one thing Bernie has going for him, he's been in the Senate for many years, and before that, the House, he's got working relationships established with a lot of Congress as walking in there. He's got a lot of respect from the members of Congress. I think that will help him. He's got a history of working with Congress. And, yes, he will be battling a Republican Congress possibly if he's elected. I would hope his, quote, political revolution would maybe help to change that. And it can a little bit. In 2 years, we hopefully will see an overturn. I think Bernie, with his established relationships in Congress, may actually be able to get some of the things he's proposing done. He's already done that. He's worked at the Republican Congress and gotten some money for housing, money for community health centers. So he's got some track record of working with the Republican Congress. One of the biggest things Bernie, I think, can do for us is possibly, you know, if Trump, you know, given Trump and given the populism on the Republican side, some of those issues are not that far from the Democratic issues right now. A lot of Republicans are going for Trump because he's, you know, he's been talking about single-payer health care. He's been talking about some of these populist ideas that Bernie has. So there's a possibility that he could match some of the Trump idealism, and there is some Trump idealism. One of the things that Bernie does do is he does poll better against Trump in many of the polls than Hillary does. So that, I think that's saying something, too, about the kind of support he will get. But, yes, it's a fair question. But, again, I think Bernie's track record in Congress and the Senate is right there working with people to get some of his agenda passed.
Okay. I'm going to Moses, you want to tackle this?
Sure, sure. Well, you know, out of the two candidates on the Democratic side, only one has raised as much money for down-ticket Democratic Party candidates as Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders has done one or two or three emails promoting some of his progressive allies for in Congress, but not very much, whereas Hillary Clinton has made it a point to devote a lot of her fundraising, some of her fundraising money to supporting down-ticket Democratic Party candidates. And that is the key. That is the key, is making sure that all Democrats come out and vote in November and that those candidates are strong and have the money to be able to go up against this Trump sound machine that is the echo chamber of the media and of Trump. So that's one reason why I think Hillary will defeat Trump, is because she understands that you build the entire party, you don't build one person, and she's making it a point to build those down-ticket Democratic Party candidates up. Second of all, I would differ with Lisa in regards to Sanders' friendships with other legislators in Congress. I can't think of one foreign policy achievement legislatively that Bernie Sanders can point to, that makes me wonder if I can't think of one foreign policy achievement of his legislatively. Are there others that he's not been able to achieve? I think so, and I think it comes down to pragmatism versus idealism. The pragmatism of being able to get legislation passed that will pass, and as well as building up the down-ticket Democratic Party candidates and the system, the Democratic Party system, to get more Dems elected. Bernie, you know, how long has he been a Democrat? What is the day today? I think it's been less than a year that he's been a Democrat. What time is it? So I just question his devotion to the Democratic Party cause, and I question his intent here. I think it sounds like more promoting Bernie Sanders than it does the Democratic Party.
Okay, well, thank you both. I want you both to stick around. There'll be other opportunities for both of you to comment, but I think we should go to the phones right now.
503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's go to Francis.
Good morning. Hi, there's so many points to make, and I'm not going to mention every single one of them. But I think maybe as far as the legislative achievements, Bernie Sanders just got an award from the veterans regarding his achievements in uniting various members of the Congress for legislation in support of veterans. And I disagree with your guest utilities representative there. But I wanted to ask a question about foreign policy. It is alarming to me that this woman who's calling herself representing me is an admirer of Henry Kissinger. And her recent activities when she was Secretary of State are also quite alarming to me, particularly in Honduras and when there was that coup, military coup, and the duly elected president was sent away, and she blocked his return and basically supported this coup. And there's some of her corporate representative friends were instrumental in somehow, it's really vague as to what happened there, but I know Lanny Davis, who was a friend of hers and also an attorney that represented her husband years ago, was involved in meeting with corporate leaders down there during this time. And the people in Honduras are fleeing. They have been fleeing. A lot of the children who came across without, sometimes unaccompanied, or women and children who were eventually deported. There was a lot of things going on there, and it seems that she's just kind of given a free ride in having to explain herself on that. And it's really concerned. So does Moses have anything to say about that?
All right. Well, thank you, Francis, very much for your call, as usual. And we'll give each of our guests a chance to respond, and we'll start with you, Moses.
Well, sure. Well, I appreciate the woman's perspective. I really do. But one thing I do know is that, you know, for 4 years, President Obama, one of the finest presidents we've ever had, trusted and confided and had confidence in Secretary Clinton as Secretary of State to represent our country internationally. Now, you know, I'm not sure of the specifics of what she brought up, but I trust President Obama. And I do know that we have a nuclear arms agreement now, thanks to the foundation that Hillary laid in those 4 years. There's the building, the coalition that she built to get the sanctions against Iran, the ceasefire in Gaza, protecting Israel. You know, there's so many things that she can point to that she did in for 4 years, but fundamentally it boils down to President Obama trusted her to represent our country for 4 years, and I trust President Obama.
Okay, Lisa, do you have a response?
A few. One thing that I want to point out that, you know, Senator Sanders and his immigration policy is basically saying that he is going to, you know, do what he can to assure that people seeking asylum from places like Honduras are going to, you know, get asylum here. So I think he's going to try to deal with that. We've had so many horror stories of kids being turned back at the border. So he's going to address that. One thing I want to point out about Senator Sanders, while he did vote to authorize use of force in Afghanistan, which shows that, yes, Senator Sanders is very concerned about our security, he did vote against Iraq, which Hillary later, I think, admitted, said that, you know, that was a mistaken vote she made. And we are all about mistakes, but consistency is really important. I think Sanders really shows that. He has stood against that war in Iraq. He wanted the troops withdrawn from Afghanistan as soon as possible. He supported the Iran deal. His foreign policy is basically he will stand by the security for American people with ISIS and with the terrorism in the Middle East. He is all for having the countries affected there, working with them to help them ensure their stability. So I think his foreign policy is right on line with keeping us safe and yet not getting us into the wars that we shouldn't be in.
Okay. I appreciate both of your comments. There are a couple of things I want to throw out here, which I think they're important. The situation with people coming to this country in recent years, particularly the young people, and then being put essentially in what are called holding centers or detention centers is very disturbing. And recently I discovered, and maybe a lot of you out there know better than I, that the ICE centers, these places that the government uses, really are, in order for them to work, have to be filled. And this is a driving force It's part of the prison industrial complex. It's a driving force behind the grabbing of people. This, to me, is seems inhumane and really, really very stupid.
All right. Matt writes in to the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe with a topical comment. So I'm going to go ahead and read this right now. Regarding what Moses just said on your program, Hillary talks a lot about raising money for down-ticket Democrats, but she actually takes most of the money for herself. Her scheme is only legal because the Supreme Court made it legal in the McCutcheon versus FEC case a couple of years ago. Furthermore, I'm not sure why we should expect Republicans to work with Hillary. They wouldn't work with Obama, and they like Hillary less. Bernie works with them, and they admire his honesty, even if they don't agree with a lot of his positions. They won't work with Hillary, period. I'm not sure why anybody would believe differently. Now, this is an interesting question because it sheds light on this notion of pragmatism and what could either of these candidates hope to accomplish as president in the face of hard opposition in the Congress. This reader, who also links to a piece on Politico.com, which I'll admit I have not yet read, this writer suggests that the more pragmatic choice might be Senator Sanders because he would be better able to work with the Republican Congress. So let's give our guests a chance to respond. We'll start with you, Lisa.
So I think the question was kind of piggybacking on your old question about each of them working with the Congress that's going to be at odds with them.
Yep.
So I guess I want to reiterate what I said before is Senator Sanders has those relationships. Senator Sanders polls much more favorably than Hillary does. Hillary and Trump are polling very low in favorability. So I think that says a whole lot about how he will work better with Congress right now. And I think part of it may stem from Hillary's work as a Secretary of State. She does not have the working relationships that Sanders has. And that's going to, from day one, really affect some of the change that he can make. Sanders is a negotiator. He has ideals, and I think he has shown in some of the health care things he has done, and the veterans things and especially, that he can work with the other side. So I think he's got those standing history with Congress to do that. The comment about the down ticket people, Sanders has now started giving a lot of his money to other people running for Congress and Senate for people who are supporting his agenda. So he is now giving a lot of his campaign money to other people. So that, again, that's not entirely true. And I want to address the Clinton Foundation, which is now also contributes to Clinton's campaign. Some of that money comes from sources that are very questionable, which again questions her relationships with others. It comes from Saudi Arabia, which country has the worst human rights abuses. Some of those funds from her campaign, from her foundation, used for her campaign, come from sources that really question where she would come from as president.
All right, Moses, I want to direct your attention to a couple of statements that that our listener made. First, that much of Hillary's down-ticket fundraising is perhaps not as altruistic as many people believe. And secondly, the notion that the Republican Congress would be motivated by its deep and irrational hatred of all people named Clinton, which is perhaps rivaled only by their deep and irrational hatred of people named Obama, and that perhaps Senator Sanders might have a better chance of working with that Congress. What do you have to say to those two points?
Well, I just find it ironic that Senator Clinton had a 70% favorability rating when she was Secretary of State, but then as soon as she announced, the GOP propaganda machine went into full force and started perpetuating all the 25 years of memes about the Clintons, and the Sanders folks and other opponents of the Clintons have picked up on all of them. You notice that my opponent just talked about the Clinton Foundation that has zero relevance to the presidential campaign. You know, I mean, they're bringing up old tropes that have zero relevance to the presidential campaign. All I know is this. Hillary Clinton has served our country, and it's been shown by multiple outlets that she is the most experienced candidate for president in recent history. And why is that? Because President Obama trusted her to be our representative internationally for 4 years as Secretary of State. She was senator for the state of New York, a population of multi-million people there for two terms. She was first lady for 8 years, and under the Clinton administration, they had wonderful economic success. You know, so I just, when I hear all these negatives about Clinton, I just immediately think, oh, this is just a perpetuation of the GOP sound propaganda machine that has been going on for 25 years plus, and shame on Democrats for adopting it.
So your contention is there's no there there when it comes to these
Correct.
Sort of
there is no there there.
All right, let's take care of a little business and we'll go back to the phones. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio activist and author Bill McKibben speaks on breaking away from fossil fuels, a past guest on this program.
Yeah, he's a great person.
He is a great person. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints is off today. Instead, we'll hear Letters in Politics featuring former Greek Minister of Finance Yanis Varoufakis. Apologies for pronunciation there.
But he is also a great person. Got two great people.
Who discusses his new book, And the Weak Suffer What They Must. At 11 on stage and studio, D.M. Roberts features Defunct Theater's world premiere production of The Udmurts by David Zelnick. The Udmurts. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Jeff Yon, editor of Port, and video artist Adam Simmons about Habitats, a group show at the University of Oregon's Portland campus. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported community radio station. By the way, thanks to everyone who supported us during our recent membership drive.
Yeah, yeah, that's an important point. I there's a couple of things I want to raise here just off the top of my head. One of the things that is going to, I'm going to be talking about this a lot as the campaign progresses, no matter who is the nominee of the Democratic Party. There's a guy named Roger Stone that people really need to pay attention to. He was the original Swift boater. He was the guy who created, out of the heroic actions, which were unfortunate in the sense that the Vietnam War was unfortunate, that created the notion that the presidential candidate at that time was, rather than being a hero, was actually a coward. And this was not responded to quickly enough by the Democratic Party. And the result was really quite disastrous. And people, not knowing a lot, fell into a pattern of assuming that somehow that there might be some truth to these accusations. Stone followed that up, the swift boating technique, followed that up with an attack on Acorn, if you recall, and destroyed that organization, which got a lot of poorer people to vote. And now, there's a lot of these things, but he is very much involved in the Trump campaign and is one of the people who persuaded Donald Trump to run for president. Now, essentially, he's attacking the Clintons by creating the idea that Hillary Clinton is an enabler of her husband's alleged assaulting of women, as opposed to his picadillos, and suggesting that, in fact, the Clintons are anti-woman and are willing to and eager to destroy the lives of ordinary women. And this is all part of a pattern that is very, very scary. And it will be, if I would say that if Bernie were to be the candidate, that attention would then be turned to him. Right now, it's focused on Hillary.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Dominic, good morning.
Hello, thank you. So I want to speak to the argument of the pragmatism.
Okay.
And point out that if you look back in history, which you, Abe and Joe, both know quite well, you'll see that almost all major progressive change in this country has come with a movement behind it. Not all of it, but almost all of it. And so I would say it's more pragmatic to have this revolution Bernie Sanders speaks of and know that he needs people behind him to do anything. So the Congress isn't going to support either one of them. Bernie knows that. That's why he has a movement behind him. Furthermore, as far as the down ticket stuff, Hillary Clinton's very good at raising money for the down ticket, but that doesn't do any good if you don't pull out voters. Congress is always Republican when the voter turnout is low. That's when Republicans get power. Bernie Sanders brings out voters. Hillary Clinton will not. That's all I have.
Well, that's an interesting argument. I think I'll allow Moses to respond to that initially.
Well, I disagree 100% on that. I think that Hillary Clinton is going to bring out the female vote in droves, and we're going to see numbers that you haven't seen in presidential elections before. Also, you know, let's point out the minority vote. You know, we're all not white men. You know, so the idea that in the minority vote in, for instance, South Carolina, she won 76% of the vote in South Carolina. In New York, she won 55% of the vote over there. But when it came to the minority vote, it was much greater. So I think that we're putting on our white privilege blinders on here as far as our progressivism and not taking into account the minorities that have not been able to achieve the kind of success that we've been able to achieve. You know, so I think that women are going to come out in droves. I think minorities are going to come out in droves. And I think that white men are either going to vote for Sanders or Trump. And I think that, you know, as a white man myself, I'm supporting Hillary because I want to improve the lives of all people in the United States through pragmatic progressivism.
Okay. Lisa, do you have a response?
Yes, a couple of things. First of all, if you look at who's supporting Sanders, it's the millennials. He's got their vote. Why do they have their vote? They're the ones who are feeling the economic crunch. Sanders stands for people who are, you know, not just your middle-class Americans. He is for people who are really struggling to make it. And I kind of disagree with Moses in the sense that Sanders is now attracting more and more of the minority vote because they realize that $15 minimum wage, a free public education is really going to get them somewhere. Sanders has come out and talked about, on the town hall, he spent a long time talking about things like child care, the necessity of providing that for everyone who needs it, housing. He's talking about the things that everyone, minorities, non-minorities, everyone needs. And I think in that sense, he's really the one who's talking to the population. I kind of try and think, what's the rest of the needed to address? I think that was basically part of who he's going to attract. Also, I think the thing about women, if you're a woman, I stand for Sanders. People need to vote for the most qualified candidate. The woman card just doesn't go. People say, yes, it's great to have a woman in the White House. Let's have a qualified person in the White House. That's number one. And who is most qualified and who is going to represent the needs of the American people? Hillary does a lot of talking about the middle class, and let's improve the middle class. Bernie talks about the middle class, and he talks about the poor who are struggling and how to get them into the middle class. That's one of the main reasons I support Bernie is he's really talking to all of us. And more he is, people are realizing, hey, he's talking to the minorities, too. He's talking to everyone.
Okay, well, thank you both. I think it's time to go to the phones. Who do we have?
Who's next, Steve? Mitch, good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'd like to confront Moses on the believability of our President Obama and extending that coattail to Hillary Clinton. I was an Obama supporter in 2008, and in that campaign, in the primary, the Democratic campaign, President Obama ran against Hillary Clinton, and their primary disagreement, they seemed to agree on most economic issues, their primary disagreements were on foreign policy issues. Now, after the president that I worked very hard to get into office in 2008 ran on opposing Hillary Clinton's foreign policy ideas, the one cabinet position he gives her as Secretary of State, does that build credibility? Is that the credibility, the believability that President Obama has shown that Moses is referring to here? How about we hear an awful lot about obstructionism in the Republican-dominated Congress and Senate, but what we don't hear about is where the Republicans, the GOP, and the Tea Party have both signed on to President Obama and backed him completely. We don't hear about that. Just like Moses didn't hear about Honduras, apparently Moses didn't hear that the GOP and the Republicans backed President Obama's 2012 Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, Chorus FTA. You can go on Common Dreams, a non-profit bipartisan website, and after 2012 we signed that agreement with Korea, see what the economic outcomes have been across industry in the United States. On Common Dreams in 2015 they did a story that you can search under the keywords unhappy third anniversary of Chorus FTA, Chorus being Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. So these are just, Moses is building a campaign for Hillary Clinton based on President Obama's credibility, and I don't think there's anything there. So if he could address that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you for the comment. I think we should begin by allowing Moses to respond.
And keep it brief, Moses, because I think we're going to segue into your closing statements here shortly.
Well,
there's a lot there, but try and keep it as brief as you can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, what can I say? You know, I trust President Obama's opinion more than I do that caller's.
Okay. Lisa, do you have a comment on this?
You know, not really. I think I already commented and said that. I think we need to evaluate people on what they have done and what they believe and how they're going to better the American people.
Yeah, I unfortunately, we don't really have time today, another day perhaps, to talk again about the whole trade agreement pattern that we're seeing right now. As you know, there's the push for the Trans-Pacific Agreement and then another one with Europe. And I think that these are very important issues that need to be examined very carefully, both of which is being supported by the Obama administration.
All right. Before we go to our closing statements, I would like both of you very quickly to comment on two things. First, the current state of the Democratic nominating process and the path to victory for your respective candidates. Let's start with you, Moses.
Well, I'm having a flashback to 2008. Back in 2008, I was a Hillary Clinton delegate, national delegate, and you know the campaign lasted until the very end, till the very last primary, like this current one is going to happen, and then Hillary, with much class and dignity and respect for the process, went ahead and fully supported President Obama as a Democratic Party nominee. And I would really, really hope that Sanders supporters and Senator Sanders will get behind the Democratic Party nominee 100%, showing the same kind of class that Hillary Clinton did in 2008.
Are you suggesting that the nomination is sewn up at this point?
Yes. There's a 17%. She only has to win 17% of the remaining delegates to win, of the pledged delegates to win the nomination.
So do you believe that
Bernie Sanders is not going to win?
You believe Senator Sanders should withdraw from the campaign?
That's his choice. You know, Hillary stuck around until the very end in 2008. I don't expect Bernie Sanders to not run a hard race until the end of the primary. But I do expect him, and I do expect him, to get behind the Democratic Party nominee after everything is said and done. Or, you know, that's why we're called Democrats. Because we get behind the Democratic Party nominee, especially in this era of Trump.
Some people might suggest there's other reasons why Democrats call themselves Democrats. But, anyway, Lisa.
That may be so, but then they might not be necessarily Democrats, are they?
Okay. Listen, Lisa, you want to respond to this as well?
Yes. First of all, I think one of your people said at the beginning, the whole superdelegate thing was started when Democrats got afraid back with the McCarthy-McGovern era, when they were afraid that non-establishment candidates were going to try to become president. So the superdelegate process is in place to support your establishment candidates, and I think that process needs to go. Maine has done that. Maine has their Democratic Party voted to have their superdelegates follow the caucus decision. And I think we need to, as a country, look at what they did and say, yeah, let's do the right thing and have our superdelegates actually follow the will of the people. I think the whole process needs to be taken out of place. I also agree with you that Electoral College is very unfair and undemocratic. And again, that doesn't really represent the will of the people. It's possible the way we have it set up now is for a president to get elected without the popular vote. As for Sanders supporting Hillary if she's a nominee, I think he has said again and again that he will definitely support whoever the nominee is, including Hillary. And he has said in statements that, you know, how he, you know, really believes that she's going to be a much better candidate than any of the Republicans. So I think she, you know, he will have her support, just as I believe that, you know, Hillary will support Sanders. you know, and I still think Sanders does have a path to the nomination. It may not be as strong as Hillary's, but, you know, he can get there. And those of us who support Sanders, you know, support his nomination, but also really hope he continues the race and we know he will, because his agenda and his platform has to be out there. And I think he will continue with, you know, having people speak up and continue his agenda.
All right. So now we've reached the end of our time. So I'm going to ask you both to give one last pitch as to why Oregon primary voters should support your respective candidates.
And before you do that, I want to urge everyone out there to make sure that you vote. You have 1 week from today to get your ballots in.
Moses, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I've been thinking a lot about this election, especially because of my 74-year-old mother. My mother is Hispanic, and she used to work in the fields picking strawberries down in the Willamette Valley as a child. And she didn't have many rights as an immigrant child, you know. And so when I think of Hillary Clinton and voting for Hillary Clinton and Hillary Clinton becoming president of this United States, I think of my mother and the fact that she will live in a world where the first woman president will have elected our first woman president. My 11-year-old daughter will look at that and be able to say, I can achieve anything, you know, because of the example of Hillary Clinton. And so I'm voting, I'm working hard for my mother. I'm working hard for my 11-year-old daughter. I'm working hard for the minorities in this country that haven't had a fair shake given to them. I'm working hard for people here in Oregon that are struggling to make it, and they need a fair break. And so, you know, I feel that Hillary, through her approach of pragmatic progressivism, she will get this country beyond the Obama years and into the future, and she will do a wonderful job for us.
Okay.
And I encourage everybody to go vote by May 17th.
Okay. Lisa, your turn.
So I guess I would like to call Sanders kind of realistic idealism. I think he is a candidate who really stands for all Americans. When you talk about America joining, you know, the rest of the progressive democratic nations in health care and Social Security and stability that most nations offer their people, and we don't, education, the right to child care, the right to affordable housing, he's really speaking to the needs of all the American people. As the middle class starts slipping and we look at the inequality gap, we all need these programs. We all need these things to help us achieve and to help us advance. Bernie comes from an immigrant family. He comes from a family. He knows what it's like to struggle. He knows what it's like to be out there and to really have to work hard for what you get. I think I admire and respect Hillary. I think we need to really look at people's qualities beyond their sex, race, etc. We need to really look at what they stand for and what they're going to do for us. I think that Sanders has working relationships in Congress and the Senate, which he's proved he's had. He's been there since 91, and he will use those, and he will, you know, he will take us further, and he will take us to a place where I think everyone will be able to, you know, get more out of life and succeed.
Okay, well, thank you both very much. It was a very interesting conversation, and I think very useful for a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, appreciate you both
taking the time to join us. Thank you, Abe.
And I want to tell people that we will be, as this process continues, looking at some of the nonsense that is taking place. I'm going to really concentrate on my discovery of the role of Roger Stone and his way of distorting politics in this country and his association with Donald Trump.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody who called and wrote into the show today. Thanks to our guests, Lisa and Moses. Really appreciate your time. You know, and thank you also for volunteering with your respective campaigns.
This is good. I think this is a very important conversation. Probably we'll have a chance to have it again.
Let's hope so. And thanks to everybody again for your support during KBOO's recently completed spring membership drive. We literally would not be here without your support.
Okay. Y'all stay tuned for the best in music and the best in public affairs broadcasting here on KBOO 90.7 FM. USA.
KBOO Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the World Beat PDX monthly series featuring Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe in Portland. Wamba plays percussive jazz and funk with a strong World Beat influence and will be playing two sets that evening. Again, that's Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all your support during our recently completed spring membership drive. We can't do it without you. Thanks to all of our renewing members, our new members, and everyone who helped get KBOO to this fantastic place it is today. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
I wanna thank you, baby, for loving me. I wanna thank you, baby, for loving me.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, activist and author Bill McKibben speaks on breaking away from fossil fuels. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints is off. We'll hear Letters and Politics, featuring former Greek Minister of Finance Yanis Varoufakis, who discusses his new book, And the Weak Suffer What They Must. And at 11 on Stage and Studio, D-May Roberts features Defunct Theater's world premiere production of The Udmurts by David Selnick. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews Jeff Yon, editor of Port, and video artist Adam Simmons about Habitats, a group show.